Listeners, Annabelle Gordon is back. She walked right out of the woods last night, and oh man, did it cause a commotion. The guards didn't realize it was her at first, or they couldn't believe it. They must have had every weapon in the knock aimed at her. I was anxious to finally see who everyone had been talking about for so long. She still wore the Oasis coveralls. She was a little dirty, but otherwise appeared completely normal. And when she got closer, I could see her face. She looked calm. She said she needed to speak to the council immediately, that it was urgent. They took her straight to the chapel where a crowd had gathered. Everyone wanted to see her, but the security forces were keeping everyone back. Or trying to. I don't know how I managed, but I was able to get inside. There was no way I was missing this. Inside, Annabelle told her story to Moreau and the other members of the council. Whitlock wasn't there, still gone on his expedition. We listened intently to everything. No one interrupted her. What she said astounded and unsettled us all. Fortunately, my dear listeners, I was able to get close enough to record the entire thing. And I'll play it for you now.
I know you all have questions. You want to know where I've been and what happened, and I want to answer them. I will, but please, you must let me start from the beginning. I'll tell you where I went, and I'll tell you the reason I've come back. The day I was taken, I knew something bad was going to happen. I remember I was nervous. I'd been on collection parties before, but those had been closer to the knock, where the guards could keep an eye on you, where you could see if something was coming. But that day, Marie insisted that we go further out, near the forest. I was nervous being so close to the trees, but I tried to keep calm by talking to Marie. When she stepped away to pray, I began to sing a little song to myself instead, to keep my spirits up, you know? There were some bushes with yellow berries, a kind we hadn't seen before growing around the roots of the trees. I had to take a few steps into the forest so I could reach them. That's when I saw it. It was one of them. It looked almost like a person, but it was much taller and thinner than any man I'd seen. Its skin was gray and its eyes were yellow. You know, like a lizard's. It stood between the trunks a dozen yards away. It didn't approach me, and I didn't run. It looked at me, and I looked back. I should have screamed, but I was too shocked. And then they grabbed me. There were others, ones I hadn't seen, but I didn't know until their fingers were around my mouth and an arm around my waist. Before I knew what was happening, I was carried into the woods. You can imagine I'd never been so terrified. I felt sure I was going to die. They moved fast, slipping between the tree trunks with ease, all while my captor held me with an arm around my waist and a hand on my mouth. It was over an hour before we finally stopped. I expected they would kill me then. Now that we were far enough away that my screams would be useless. But instead, they bound me and placed a kind of hood over my head. They left me alone then, but didn't go too far. I could hear them speaking to one another throughout the night. The sound of their voices was low, guttural. At some point, I must have slept. The next day, the journey resumed. They kept me bound with the hood on, but continued to carry me. I don't know how far we traveled, but we stopped to make camp once more. Each night, I expected the worst. And each night, they left me alone. On the third day, we reached our destination. And they removed the hood at last.
Mission log, Romeo Bravo 3 Bravo. This is Captain Beckett, and finally, some good news. A rescue team arrived today. There was a dozen of them, heavily armed. They looked a little worse for the wear, and I was surprised to see that they were all on foot. Their commander identified himself as Lieutenant Cash. He wanted to know the status of the crew right away. So when I told him that they were in hibernation, that the resuscitation cycles hadn't kicked on, he didn't seem concerned. He was relieved, if anything. Turns out the lockout wasn't a systems glitch. It was intentional. The search team was carrying codes, authorization codes, for all the systems, including life support. As his crew took inventory of the supplies, he and I started the resuscitation. When the cycles began, I noticed him scanning frozen faces inside each pod, double-checking identification plates. He lingered on one in particular. It was a woman, and I didn't ask him who she was, mainly because I didn't have to. It was apparent when she awoke. He hasn't left her side for the rest of the day. They're all conscious now, all 22 of them. But it's not all good news. The new Oasis colony is gone. Cash admitted this after I kept pressing him. I kept asking how far was it, which direction. He told me there had been a bad storm. You know, people had run off, gone crazy. It was Alpha Colony all over again, he said. This crew here, his search team, were the few who were left. There weren't any others.
I found myself inside a cage. There were no metal bars, but a tangle of branches twisted together. We were in a cave. No, a cavern. It was enormous. I don't know if it was day or night, but they had lit a fire for light. The cage was surrounded by more of these creatures. At least 10. They were all naked except for jewelry, necklaces or rings in their ears and noses made of bone. All but one of them held wooden poles. They would jab them into the cage to prod up my body, my legs, even my head. Again, I thought for certain they were going to kill me. And so I screamed. It was the first sound I made since I'd been captured. But it had an effect. The prodding stopped, and the creature that didn't carry a pole approached the cage. He reached to the ground and made unusual markings in the dirt. When he was finished, he backed away and looked at me, like he was awaiting a response. When I didn't say anything, again the others prodded me with their poles, and when I screamed in protest, again they stopped. The creature stooped and made a second sign in the dirt. This time I spoke. I told him I didn't understand. But my voice, it made them excited. They started speaking to each other, and the creature drew a third sign. This went on for hours. None of it made any sense, but I responded. I was so exhausted. I wanted to be left alone. I was getting frustrated, so I said whatever came to my head. I told them one symbol looked like a man, or the other looked like an elephant. I was being absurd, but I was too tired to care any longer. The following day, it was the same. Each time I spoke, no matter what I said, they grew excited. If I didn't speak, they would punish me with their sticks. So I spoke. A lot. It was dawning on me what they were doing. They weren't interested in examining my body. They were trying to learn my language. Our language. Once I understood this, I knew what I had to do to survive. I must have recited the alphabet 1,000 times over the next few days. I sang it in its original tune you learn in kindergarten, and when I got bored of that, I sang it in different melodies. I recited dialogue from old movies I could remember, I sang pop songs. At first, it was only the ones I knew the words to, but then I started to sing others, replacing lyrics with nonsense I made up. These creatures loved it. There were no wrong answers. They just wanted to hear it. Somehow it was all they needed. By the third day, only 3 days, they began to respond back. But not in their peculiar language, in mine. At first it was only a word. A single, struggled syllable. Land. That's when I started drawing pictures in the dirt and sounding out the words. Land. Trees. Man. They would respond, mimicking my speech. It was phrases now, awkward still, but comprehensible. It was incredible. They were learning a language in a matter of days. On the 5th day, they spoke to me. I mean, actually spoke to me. They told me in somewhat broken phrases why I'd been taken. They said I was to serve a great purpose for their tribe and mine. I had done well to give their people a second tongue. But my purpose was not completed. They were going to let me go, to send me back to speak with you all here, and bring with me a message.
Mr. Park, when I returned to the colony this morning, Moreau met me at the gate. He had news to share, and it couldn't wait. Do you remember the missing colonist who disappeared weeks ago? Well, she's returned. Last night, she walked out of the trees. Can you believe such a thing? I had certainly taken her for dead long ago. Evidently, her story confirmed Caldwell's sightings. She'd been taken captive by natives, some kind of savage people living in the forest. Moreau said they'd taken her so they could learn our language. They had no intentions of war. Rather, they were sending a delegation to meet with our colonists to discuss how our communities might live in peace together, and for some kind of trade relationship. I need to speak with Annabelle myself, to understand exactly what idiocy led her to go missing in the first place. But there'll be time for that later. This delegation will be arriving within the hour, and I'm to meet with them. I was adamant it should be an Oasis representative who will broker this exchange. We argued about this. But Moreau eventually gave in. Still, he was insistent I pay respect to these people. Annabelle had described certain customs and gestures that were expected, and he wanted to be sure I understood these. I don't know if it's exactly the kind of way we should start this relationship, kowtowing so readily to their culture. But there'll be time to impress upon them the benefits of our society later on. For now, I will observe this ceremony. If it means moving this partnership forward. Can you imagine the glory, Mr. Park? A name to be remembered by the history of our kind. Governor Charles Whitlock, the man who established first contact between our peoples.
They said we are intruders. That this land we've built our colony, where the ocean meets the green field, is a treasured hunting ground of their people. We have insulted their ancestors by building here without permission. Our unnatural structures and the odor of our presence drives away the herds. Because we've taken without asking, we've cursed this land. We've brought what they call the Red Death. They said they're not afraid of our people. They have watched us for a long time, observed us from the shadows of the trees. Without our magic, they think we're weak. Their warriors would easily overpower us. They've assured me that their numbers are countless, more than the trees. But they also recognize our ignorance. They do not want to bring bloodshed. They would rather have peace. They know more of us will come, and they would rather our peoples live in harmony. But they cannot ignore our offense. They are willing to make peace, to reach an understanding. They said they can even take away the Red Death, but this must be our choice, and there must be restitution for the stolen land. A price must be paid. If we wish to make peace, we must also make a sacrifice. We must offer one of our own, willingly, as a sacrifice. This life would be forfeit, but their blood would bring the required recompense.
Dear sister, something miraculous has happened. The Reverend visited me today. It was still early in the morning when he came for me. The light had begun to break when I saw him approach across the field. He was alone. When I saw it was him, I drew myself up. I tried to look strong for him, to show him I was accepting of my punishment, that I was still faithful. But when he came near and I saw his face, I felt myself break. He stopped a few feet away, but he said nothing. This silence was more than I could bear. I knew I wasn't strong. I realized I hadn't only failed you, but I'd failed him. I'd failed the children of the stars, I'd failed everyone. I couldn't even look at him. The Reverend asked me then, in the gentlest voice, if I was ready now to serve my purpose, if I was willing to truly accept the fate the stars had chosen for me. Sister, I was broken. I was weeping openly, but I couldn't refuse him. I told him yes. Yes, I was ready. I would do whatever he asked.
Tomorrow they will come to the edge of the field. They will bring their warriors. They have alerted the other tribes and will assemble a great number. If we want war, we should prepare for this fight tomorrow afternoon. If we choose this, they have promised me their armies will not cease until all of us have been slaughtered. They will raise our colony, tear down the wall and the structures, and throw it into the great sea. They will wipe away our presence from this place. But if we choose peace, then we should follow these instructions. We are to send the one we have chosen, our sacrifice, into the field. They should be dressed in red and carry with them no weapon. A delegation will meet them. When the sacrifice approaches, and this is important, they should raise their left hand above their head with fingers extended. Their other hand should make a fist and cover their chest. This is the sign, the signal that they are willingly giving themselves for our insult.
Moreau removed my chains. He put his cloak around me. I was so weak I could barely stand, but he helped me back to the knock. Inside the gates, he took me to the chapel and had the others tend to me. They were kind. They gave me food and tended to cuts on my feet and the sores on my wrists. The Reverend instructed me to go and wash myself and to join him outside when I was done. I did as he asked. I washed quickly and dressed in a fresh robe they had laid out. I found the Reverend waiting. I followed him through the knock. Many of the others gazed as we passed, like they were seeing a ghost, but I did my best to ignore them. He led me to the top of a guard post on the western wall. We both looked out on the open field below. Before I could ask him what he desired of me, I saw something appear from out of the trees. Two figures. They were natives, sister. I gazed at them in fascination. From this distance, I could see they were tall creatures. They wore masks and held long spears with crude blades on either end. As we watched, more appeared, all of them slipping from between the tree trunks and out into the open. There were hundreds of them, but they waited near the edge of the field. The colony gates opened below. We watched as three of our own marched outside. I recognized Whitlock, flanked by two of our security guards. I remember thinking it odd he was no longer wearing his typical suit. Instead, he was wearing a robe like ours, but dyed in a dark red color. He strode out into the field, pompous and unconcerned. When he had reached the center, he stopped, and the creatures approached. There were only two of them who stepped forward, but they towered over him. We watched as Whitlock raised a hand into the sky, his left hand. With his other, he made a fist over his heart. He bowed ever so slightly as he did this. I didn't look away. I didn't blink, not for one second. I watched the creatures strike. It was vicious. Their weapons moved in unison, one through the waist, and another through the neck. Without a sound or gesture, the creatures retreated to the woods and disappeared. The rest of them soon followed. The only sign of their coming was the bloody heap that lay in the field. The remains of Charles Whitlock. The Reverend put a hand on my shoulder. He told me I was forgiven. I wish I could say I was comforted, but somehow I feel more uneasy than ever before.